Even before Jeremy Lin of the New York Knicks exploded on the NBA scene, the league had lots of fans in China. Commissioner David Stern has visited the country to create more connections between China and the NBA and everything the league has to sell. In 2008, former Seattle Supersonics head coach Bob Weiss accepted a job as advisor to a Chinese professional team, the Brave Dragons, owned by a man who wanted to inject some NBA glitz into his lackluster squad. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Jim Yardley tagged along, and in his new book, Brave Dragons, he tells the story of the American coach's adventures in China. Jim Yardley joins me from KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Bringing Bob Weiss to China in 2008 was the idea of one Boss Wang, the owner of the Brave Dragons. Tell us a little bit about the boss and what he thought he could accomplish by hiring a former NBA coach to advise the coaches and players under his employment.
Well, Boss Wang is a tremendously colorful character. He's a guy, and in some ways, he's representative of his generation. He's someone who was a boy when China was having the Great Leap Forward, when there were these terrible famines, and he literally ate bark off trees to stay alive. And then in the late 70s and early 80s, China introduced market reforms, and he went into business, and he left behind. He became what's known as a red hat capitalist, and he became very, very rich, and he loved basketball. He was obsessed with it, and he became obsessed with NBA basketball. So he got himself a team in the Chinese league, and the team was awful, just god-awful. First, he sent his players to train in Oregon. Then he decided he wanted to hire an NBA coach, and he got Bob Weiss.
Bob Weiss's initial understanding was that he was coming to China as an advisor to the head coach. How did he find out that, oops, nope, he was going to be the head coach?
Well, it happened in several stages. He called someone here in the United States who'd helped arrange his being hired and asked, what sort of clothes do I need to take? Because as a consultant, he may or may not have been sitting on the bench. If he sat on the bench, he would have been required to wear a suit. But if he didn't sit on the bench, then he wouldn't bring a lot of suits. And the guy told him, well, things have changed. You are no longer a consultant. You are the head coach. And he was leaving in a matter of days. So Bob gets on his flight. He's flying over. He lands in China. He thinks he's going to have a week in Beijing. The Olympics have just started. He's going to see some games. And instead, he's greeted by the team translator. And he says that you have to be at practice at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And the next morning, Bob Weiss shows up at the gym. He can't speak a word of Chinese, and his players can't speak a word of English, and he begins practice.
All right, so how successful was he in doing what he was hired to do, that is, turn the Brave Dragons into something like an NBA team?
Well, I guess, you know, they were 5-24 the year before he came, and of those five wins, two came by forfeit. So they really only won three games on the court. The end of the year, Bob's year, they won 26 games and lost 24. So it was one of the biggest turnarounds in the history of the Chinese league. But if you ask, was he allowed to sort of instill the NBA and the American style of the game, that's where the collision of cultures occurred. The owner, Boss Wang, at one level, he was sort of a reformer and he wanted change, but he was also very traditional and a very traditional sort of Chinese boss in many ways, where control of the team, control of the players was essential. So, you know, when Weiss came, he sort of loosened the reins a little bit. He canceled some meetings, which were basically the equivalent of curfew checks. And I think it made the owners nervous.
You write that the fate of most of the Chinese players in the pro league there was to be, quote, ground into dust. What led you to that conclusion?
Well, basically, you see players in China retiring when they're 27 years old. I watched a practice once in which all of the American players were sitting on the sidelines, and the Chinese assistant coach had the Chinese players there, and they were running full court suicide sprints. Then they did these triangle sprints around the court. It was in the middle of winter. The gym was unheated, and the coach ran them and ran them and ran them until literally there were two guys who collapsed on the floor. And the Americans were stunned. Like, two of these guys had played in the NBA, and they were just like, they couldn't believe this was happening. They just saw it as being so counterproductive. But the Chinese coach thought, this is the way I'm going to make my team tougher.
Bonzi Wells is one of the players who tried to extend his career in China. I gather the experience did not go well. You characterize Wells as, quote, the anti-ambassador more likely to start a war than prevent one. What happened with his attempt to play in China?
Bonzi's an interesting guy. I mean, he had a pretty fiery reputation in the NBA, and he came over, and I think he wanted to show the NBA he still had game. On the court, he was incredible. I mean, he was scoring 40 points a game. But, you know, he's a very individualistic guy, a very talented guy. You know, his collisions with the owner were pretty epic. Bonzi wasn't, you know, in one of the games, the owner hit a Chinese player who Bonzi had sort of taken under his wing. And so Bonzi just confronted the owner and confronted him at halftime. That was just, you didn't do that.
Do you have a story or two about a U.S. player for whom playing in China worked out well?
You know, there's a guy named Jason Dixon, and I met him, and he plays in southern China for the Guangdong Southern Tigers, which is the best team by far in the league. And basically, this team had a very different philosophy. You know, every team is allowed to have two foreigners, and often they come in, they score the most points and get the most rebounds, and it's sort of lopsided. This team wanted to develop Chinese stars, so they wanted their American players to be good, but to be complementary. And so Dixon had a very long career in China, and I think he's an assistant coach there. And he did it by sort of working within the parameters of a team where the actual stars were the Chinese players. And so he's quite successful. I write in my book that if there were a Hall of Fame, he'd probably be in it.
You found that fans at Brave Dragons games loved screaming at the officials. Why was that?
Yeah, they did. Well, I mean, there's a lot of suspicion about some of the officiating in the Chinese league. And so there was a scene in the book when one of the games got a little bit out of control because the fans were certain, and the owner, my owner, who's a very fiery guy with officials, stomped down the sidelines and put his foot through the advertising board screaming at the officials. And right when he did that, fans started chucking lighters and chucking cups, and it was quite a scene.
I got the sense from the book that maybe one of the reasons the fans loved screaming at games and at officials was because basketball referees were the only officials that they had the opportunity to scream at in China.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You do see a lot of protest in China, and there is a lot of, and we're seeing more and more of it now as their economy changes. There's a really big police presence at these games. I mean, because the Chinese system, you know, it's illegal to have certain types of public assembly. Having a spontaneous meeting of 3,000 people, that's a tricky political situation.
We can't talk about basketball and China without acknowledging the impact Jeremy Lin of the Knicks has had recently. How have basketball fans in Taiwan and in China responded to his accomplishments and his sudden popularity?
You know, I haven't been in China since December, but I have a lot of friends there, and I've been in contact with them, and I've been looking at the coverage in the media over there. And I think it's fair to say that the public reaction has been enormous. Everyone is thrilled in both Taiwan and in mainland China. Everyone's claiming him. But what's also interesting is, you know, Lin has clearly stirred a big debate in the United States, and that is all about stereotyping. We have this impression that Asian Americans weren't as athletic, and he's obviously disproved those stereotypes in a big way. One of the things I found interesting, and I found this in my book, was that type of stereotyping actually exists within China. The Chinese coaches, the Chinese league, part of the reasons they train athletes the way they do with this repetitive drilling is that they think that they're athletically less gifted. I think in a way, Lin will be interesting because he's giving living, breathing proof that if you're 6'3 and you don't have to be 7'6 the way Yao Ming was, you can compete with the best in the world.
Jim Yardley is the author of Brave Dragons, A Chinese Basketball Team, An American Coach, and the Two Cultures Clashing. The book is published by Knopf, and the author joined me from KQED in San Francisco. Jim, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, thanks for having me.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Oliver Wyman, a global management consulting firm with 3,000 professionals serving global 1,000 companies, oliverwyman.com. And Trader Joe's, traveling the world to source a variety of foods and beverages like pizza from Italy and cheddar from Australia. Locations at traderjoes.com. This is NPR.